Brewers Podcast, sharing experiences, providing insight, and looking for solutions to become better hunters. Whether you're chasing bugles over the next ridge, sitting a stand out east, this is about passion, pursuing our dreams of field, our lifestyle, the betterment of self and community, the enlightenment that comes from those moments spent in God's creation. Through these conversations, I hope you find insight, inspiration, education, and motivation to push beyond your limits.
Literally a week before the Western Hunt Fest, so doubling down, dude.
That's actually a good primer.
Yeah.
A week out, you still get some recovery on it, and that'll be really good for that.
I've been wanting to do a marathon for a while, and I think, you know, between the Pack Mount Challenge and then the Chub Challenge that I did during December for Elk Shape, man, I had so much drive and so much get up to just be able to like get out and just stay active, stay on top of it, you know, keep my workouts ready and rocking. So
heck yeah.
I've never done a marathon, did a lot of sports in high school. So I think that this is going to kind of keep my metabolism rolling and, you know, kind of keep the training kind of still, you know, effective to say the least. You know, everything's in preparation for the September.
Heck
so,
yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to kind of kick ass, take names out here.
How did that look? And that was one of the things when I decided that we were going to do the Ruckout Challenge was kind of tailing that off of Dan's December Chub Challenge. And I figured, well, everybody's going to be pretty GD good and then roll right into that. It gives folks something to do. And then, you know, kind of flip the script a little bit because there's not many folks keeping up with Mr. Dan there.
Right, absolutely. Well, it's funny. I actually was during, you know, Christmas, it was basically going on, you know, like the whole month of December, and it was rolling and whatever. And I was just, you know, I was cranking through his podcast because I just such a nerd about the elk hunting, you know, kind of content and just understanding how the Western hunt kind of comes all together. And there's so much content that you guys have been putting out that kind of helps guys like me from the East Coast start to digest and understand how elk hunting can be easier, or at least, you know, getting yourself into preparation. So I was just rolling through all these podcasts while I was doing these exercises, and I stumbled upon the episode with you guys, mm-hmm. with you and I think Efrain doing the Western Hunt Fest stuff. And I'd actually seen the advertisement last season for the Western Hunt Fest on my Instagram. It just popped up through my feed, and I was like, man, I really want to do this. And then I started reading into the details, and I was like, man, I physically don't feel like ready for this. It was like, it was getting later too. Like it was pretty close to one of the first competitions you guys were going to have. And I said to myself, I was like, I'm going to do this next year, 100%. Heck like yeah. I'll get my elk calling down really, you know, kick ass at that. I'll start shooting more, lifting more, hunt, you know, trying to get all these things, these training regimes down. And so, you know, this whole September rolled by, you know, hunting and stuff was great. And then, you know, I rolled into the elk shape stuff and found you guys kind of just by happenstance again. And
yeah.
It was just one of those things where the podcast kind of led me, and I listened to your old story and just like all the enjoyment and the community that you guys kind of brought together for the Western Hunt Fest. And I was, you know, I think Dan pretty much put like, you know, if you're going to do something, just do the damn thing, mm-hmm. sign up. You know, get in there. Don't second guess yourself. Just jump in and go. So, you know, I got on the registration page that very next day, signed up for the one in Colorado Springs, and, you know, just been rocking out the challenges
heck
since
yeah.
then. And I think right after that, you guys rolled out the Pack 'Em Out Challenge. And just, you know, I was like, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I might as well tune all the way in. So,
oh, heck yeah. And that's that's one of the things about the event, right? I mean, you know, we could be and I don't mean this in any bad way, but we could be just another 3D shoot, right? But it's there's so much more to what we do on the mountain than just go out and, you know, pull that arrow from a pin and pray it hits the right spot.
I mean, the physicality of elk hunting is beyond what I ever anticipated. You know, this is I just finished up my third season this past year, and I think just seeing the exponential growth that I've gained through all the knowledge that, you know, guys like you, Dan Elkshape, Cam Haynes, you know, Corey Jacobson, Randy Newberg, all those guys, they've given me so many, you know, different sources to propel my elk hunting. But at the same time, like every single person that I've listened to has been like, get your ass in shape, get ready, because this is not easy. Packing in is just as hard as, you know, getting your quarters ready. And man, I can't tell you how many miles I put in this last 2-3 years and just sweating and breaking myself off just to try and get back into these holes that, you know, these four-wheelers and side-by-sides can't get to. And,
that's it.
You know, the pressure and the hunting aspect was never really a thing for me. I grew up in rural Kentucky on a pretty large farm, kind of, you know, seclude myself for turkeys and deer and quail, and didn't have anybody to really, you know, like battle with. Versus like out here, man, it's a grind, and you're constantly bumping into people and calling people in. I probably called in like 25 hunters over the last 2 seasons, which can be good and bad. Right. I guess it's a good thing to say that, you know, I'm learning how to replicate the right sounds for bulls and cows and things like that. And I guess we can kind of get into some stories about this past season later on, but you know, it's just all this information that you guys are basically making us excel in and compete in will only, you know, throw us into the stratosphere whenever we get out into elk season, you know, like give us the real deal of a training regimen, to where when we get out there, we're prepared. We're not just half-assing it. And I felt like in the first few seasons, I felt like there was a lack of knowledge that I had to really start to dig for. So
did you have a hard time, kind of, lack of a better word, meandering through as you listen to, you know, Corey and Dan and, you know, maybe me? Is it hard to kind of decipher that and dissect that information up? And how I've always viewed it is you have to, it's better to listen to everyone and then figure out what your hunting style is, what your approach is, and kind of work through it that way. Cause I mean, you could drown in all the information and go on the mountain with a level of indecisiveness that can ruin your freaking season if you're not conscious of it. And so how did that look for you? Just kind of swimming through,
you know,
all that.
It's funny you say that, actually. You know, when you start to dissect into like all of the, you know, the big names, you know, you got, you know, Chuck Adams and all of these other guys like Corey, who can almost play, you know, the devil's advocate in like the elk game. You know, one guy is going to say, well, you don't want to call too much. And then another guy is saying, consistently call, locate, cow call, make sure you're trying to get in their ear. And it's, there is a lot of division as far as like how to approach certain situations. And I think a lot of it kind of comes down to how the situation's playing out. And I think you just really have to feel it out. I grew up turkey hunting, you know, and I feel like elk hunting for me feels a lot like that, with the vocalization and chasing them. But you're chasing ungulates, and it's just, it's a completely different mind boggle when you get out there and you start hearing them, you know, bugle on ridgetops, and you're waking up at 3 to 4 in the morning and they're just going bananas. But then there's also been a season where I didn't hear a single thing, and I felt like I was locating, bugling every 45 minutes or so, and trying to kind of replicate stuff like Paul Medell. I loved his stuff. I loved listening to his elk calling seminars, just the way that he kind of approached the ability to find elk and locate elk and be able to respond with elk, and how he explained his process and the science behind it made me feel like that information was very legitimate. But my brother actually is a good friend of Dave Brinker, who was a big rep for Sitka for a while. And
that's a hell of a nice dude right there.
He got me out on a private ranch here in Colorado, and we got into some elk, and this was like my first season ever. Didn't really have a lot of the gear, was still figuring things out, wasn't really packing around any calls or anything. So I was just kind of tailing him, trying to figure out, you know, what this is all about. And I felt like that was a huge propulsion for me to be able to just to go with somebody who's already killed an elk. You know, he killed a bull in Oregon. So he had that confidence in his back pocket that he's been with somebody who's got him on elk. He's killed an elk. He knows how to follow their movements, track their scent, all the things that are really important, following wind tracks, patterns, and all those things. I felt like pretty much were like a crash course for me. Then he kind of put me onto the Elk 101 course that Corey Jacobson was doing before he swapped out of that. And that truly helped a lot. I think it was one of those things that if you're willing to sit down and study some of that information, be willing to like digest all of the unit by unit info, it's crazy, man. Like there's so much that you have to know in order to be able to come out here and do this successfully. And even in, you know, Montana and Utah and all these other places, I'd never heard of preference points till I moved to Colorado. Didn't know that that was a thing. Didn't understand that, you know, you had to put into a lottery system and do all these things. So there was so much information that I really had to digest and dive into in order to become a true elk hunter, to be able to not waste my time and devote the time into the correct places. And I feel like in the last two seasons, man, it's really helped just having guys like you that know what you're doing and are a wealth of knowledge, feeling, you know, the ability to share that knowledge is great as well, is feeling that just the unity that you guys kind of create in the elk world. You know, it's for guys like me that don't get the exposure until it's too late, or it's, you know, it takes
never
us
too
five
late.
Or six seasons to dive into this.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's, I mean, it's it is a staggering amount of information. And I still, to this day, I'll go through it all. You know, I just started getting my hits on the credit card for, I think I got Dan hit me, and I think Elk 101 hit me. And you see, you know, Roe hit. Have you listened to Chris Rowe's stuff yet?
No, never.
Chris is kind of, in my opinion, he's the icing on the cake, right? So we get out and, you know, everybody talks about calling and their approach, right? What's worked for them and the things that they've experienced over the years. Chris does that, but Chris also takes the biology approach and puts, you know, actual science, not to say that everybody is, you know, not everybody isn't, you know, putting that level of science to it. Chris is next level. Man, dive into Chris's stuff, get his modules, and just, it's unbelievable. So when you're able to take the behavioral aspects of them, and then all those things you learned with Dan, with me, with Corey, and then put that stuff together, then you'll just start seeing, oh man, that's why that didn't work. Oh wow, I should have done this. And it just starts lining the flip up, man. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And that dude just, I mean, I don't know how many years he has under his belt, but he chased elk around, you know, the mountain doing studies for 15 or 20 years in Colorado. I mean, his knowledge base is freaking phenomenal, dude. So I think Chris, in my opinion, Chris is the icing on the cake with whatever else you're looking at, you know, be it Dan's modules or Corey's modules, Elk Bros, Mike Batiste, you name it, they're out there. You put Chris on top of that, dude, and it is like fire. Fire, fire, fire.
And I think that's a big thing too for a lot of like guys like me, young guys who are moving out to Colorado, Utah, Idaho. We're always looking for that, you know, like source to lean on. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be kind of guided into that direction, but some people, they don't have that extra person in their life or whatever. You know, mine was my older brother. I grew up with three older brothers. All of us love to hunt. You know, my dad ran archery pro shop for 25 years. So we're all pretty good with the stick and bow, you know. But, you know, just being able to find people that you can communicate with that will give you that wealth of knowledge, you know, old timers or guys that, you know, run pages like you all do, that can kind of be our system to be able to, you know, follow into the right steps. And I think that was something that I was fortunate enough to be able to be handed that golden ticket and kind of look into the right information at the right time.
When do you, or have you felt it already, there's a point where you have to turn it all off and just say, this is the hunter I am, and then go for broke and see how you strike out?
Right. I think as far as like information digestion, I feel like for me, hunting and fishing and anything, it's a consistent learning curve. I don't feel like there's ever going to be a point where I'm going to stop learning, but I do feel like I'm molding into a really great elk hunter just from my ability to chase turkeys, understand sign, understand, you know, patterns and movements from just pre-existing hunting, you know, experiences back in Kentucky and Tennessee. And just being out here in the last 3 years, man, I just feel like it's an itch I can't scratch enough. You know, when September hits, dude, I'm gone.
Yeah.
You know, I can't get enough of it. And these last 2 years, you know, the stories I've been able to come back and tell my dad, who's, you know, he is the reason that the way I am, you know, my dad was just an absolute savage when it came to, you know, being an archer and loved bow hunting, loved showing us how to be an outdoorsman and taking us on big trips and shit like that. And, you know, I'd come back from these long elk trips that he's never, ever, you know, experienced. And I'll kind of dive him into the crazy, you know, elk interactions and these bulls that I've had full draw attempts on. He's just like, man, like I'm almost in tears here. Cause this is just everything I wanted to teach you. And you're out here crushing.
Right.
And, you know, you haven't put one on the ground, but you've came so close to having such a great, you know, interaction regardless. And it's just, for me, haven't put one on the ground, but I've just had these interactions in the last year, guy, where it's just like, things are clicking. You
right.
know, it's a matter of time. You know, I had a six by with a perfect right, and then his left was deformed, coming to the ground. Had him full, you know, he was coming at me bugling frontal 45 yards, and I was sitting there full draw, shaking like a leaf, dude. And I was just like, he never gave me a broadside shot. And And in that moment, I was like, I've got to let it down, because like, as soon as he busted, he went up to like 85 yards or something after that. And I kind of lost him. I was like, you know, like I can't let that moment like disappear, nor can I let it get me down, because that was
incredible. Did you blow more like, than man. You'll have.
And I had four or five other experiences just like that. And it just, to be able to share that with, you know, that same, you know, that story with my dad and my brothers and things like that, and just be able to hoo over it. It's amazing.
The question is when,
can't wait for the time I get to, you know, lay one down and be able to feel that pack out.
I guess the question is when is Pops hitting the woods with you,
man? I'm trying to get him out for muzzleloader. I think that would be his gig. Dude, if I would have had a muzzleloader this last year, I could have killed four or five bulls.
Me and you both.
120 cows and 14 bulls. First day of the season this year, archery. I pulled my grouse arrow by accident and started to rack it. Yeah, bad.
Dang.
I had three bulls at 35 yards. My buddy, I'll tell you the story. And we basically, he had never been hunting ever. And he actually just went and got his orange card right after season. He was just that jacked up about this whole experience. So first day we get up and like, you know, this is probably second season I'd gone over the counter, and we're glassing and whatever. And we don't hear much. And we got out there like late night, hiked in, and I start cow calling. And I hear like a boatload of cows just like mewing and stuff. And I'm like, there's no way that I'm this lucky to like get this close to like this herd. Like, and I hadn't spotted them, hadn't seen anything. I knew from just being out there pre-scouting early season, there was going to be something. So we go and we kind of like stalk closer and closer. And sure enough, like up on the hillside, I see a train of asses just going up the hill, man, like 40, 50 cows. And so I just like put the brakes on. We drop all of our gear, water, everything, except for the bow and the calls. Start kind of like creeping up the hillside, and they kind of disappear. They bedded down. And so we get to the top of this huge burn, look around, and I'm like, man, like we're close to a half mile away from our bags. It's like 85, 90 degrees out. Like
no water.
We're smoldering up here. And I'm like, dude, they must have hightailed it, like had to have. So we turn around, I put my arrow back in the quiver, and we probably walk maybe 200 yards down the hill. And I turn around to say something to my buddy, and his eyes just dish pans. And I turn back around, and four bulls stand up like 30, 40 yards away from me broadside and just staring me through my soul. And I'm just like, oh my God, like this is my opportunity, first day. So I pull my arrow and I'm about to load it, and I look and it's got a blunt tip on it. I'm just like, oh my God, like I cannot believe I've done this. So I toss it on the ground, try to pull another one. By that time, dude, they're
blown
they know
out.
What's happening. You know, they're trotting off. And so, you know, the next 4 or 5 days we're playing catch up with them. But just, you know, I feel like with that transition too, like I was so reluctant to have that experience with a buddy of mine who has never been elk hunting, never hunted much in his life. And now I've I've had the ability to share that experience with him, not only in the factor of like he's going to start elk hunting. He's going to start training with me and be my partner, but he's enamored with this now because of this experience that I've drawn him into, to something he would have probably never had the experience to do had it not been transitional through me. And now I feel so blessed to have that opportunity to show other people around in my friend group and in my population that there's stuff out there in these mountains that you can go and do. And hunting is one of my biggest passions, man. It was incredible.
It always amazes me. And there's something about elk. I mean, I love deer hunting. Don't get me wrong. I'll chase anything. I've said it a million times. Like, I don't care what season it is. You know, if I can get a tag, I'm getting a tag. But there's something about elk hunting. You put boots on, for me, I put boots on areas that I never would have seen. But there's something about that animal and pursuing that animal and the challenge that it provides that you're able to transition into everyday life. And it just feels like it next levels everything we do. You know, it's like, I got to work. I got to get this in because I got to be ready. I mean, you're talking, it's a life-changing thing when you start chasing elk. Absolutely a life changer, man.
And when you say that, it's like legitimate. Like this past year, you know, I moved to Colorado out of college. I'm a landscape architect by trade, but you know, I came out here more so for the recreational activities of like snowboarding, skiing, got into fly fishing, loved to fly fish, don't get me wrong. But after that first season of elk season, I've pretty much dropped about 10 hobbies that I thought I was never going to get rid of. Like even this past season, didn't buy a ski pass. I knew that money and all of the days I was going to be taking off to go skiing could benefit me further in September.
Yes, sir.
Like this is the real deal. Like yep. I'm not going to waste any more time doing these other activities because I love this so much. I get such a rush out of being out there in September and just disconnecting, man, just being as close as I can be to being primal. And that's just the truth of it all. You know, I shared that same experience with my buddy this past September and he was like, man, I can't explain the feeling I'm having right now as far as like the adrenaline after seeing these elk and like chasing them and things like that. But I can only imagine that this is like how people have felt for hundreds of thousands of years chasing these animals. And like, it's not only the fact that it's feeding you, but it's an excitement factor that you're living this crazy adventure. And it's amazing to feel. And people, you know, we're so blessed to be able to go out here and chase these animals like we do. And, you know, I see, you know, in the background, you've got some incredible mounts and you've lived.
Thank you.
Each one has its own story.
Yes, sir.
You know, and that's the beauty of it all is like you can look up on your wall and you can tell somebody from each head individually. And I heard Dan say this one time. You know, all the elk sheds and stuff, he was like, each one has its own story. Each one, you know, has its own place in my heart as far as like, you know, it's not just something where we just go out there and we shoot it and we're done. Like, this is something that is attached to an emotional and a very memorable time in my life.
That's right.
And that's something that a lot of people, you know, disregard. And I think that it's so important.
Yeah. I mean, that the work, again, the work ethic and discipline it takes to succeed in this. I mean, that, you know, that year looking up at whatever mount, you know, I'm looking at, it's like, okay, you can tell the entire hunt, like second by second, right? Conversations. There's things I can't remember from 2 weeks ago, but you put me back and you start talking September, I could walk you through day one, day 17, day 27,
100%.
You know, it's an amazing thing. So let's rewind a little bit, man, because we never even did an intro. We just started talking. So we're
that's
on
with, my thing, dude. I get a little antsy sometimes.
No, I totally get it. And then to see your expression as we're talking about it, and I can see the passion and love you have for it. And I haven't stopped smiling since we started talking, man. So just drop a quick intro, let folks know totally. Who you are. And we already said Kentucky farm boy siloed himself with deer and turkey and discovered the mountains.
Yeah. So my name's Connor Bryant. Go by Dirty Architect on Instagram. I'm a landscape architect here in Denver, Colorado, but been chasing elk for the past 2.5 years. Born and raised in Bowling Green, Kentucky, or actually Glasgow. Most of my family lives in Bowling Green or Nashville. My dad kind of raised us to be outdoorsmen. He was a pro shop archery owner for 25 years, kind of raised all four boys to be hunters, fishermen, chasing anything that had four legs or fins, man. So,
heck yeah.
You know, like I said, I can't be anything more than blessed to be out here and doing what I love to do. And, you know, I work 9 to 5 through the weeks just to be able to get to the weekend, go shoot my bow, chase elk, you know, cast a rod whenever I can. So, yeah, I've kind of more or less provided an intro for kind of what the basis of who I am and kind of what I've been getting into out here in the Western country. So
I want to, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I want to get into your work ethic, right? And that was one of the things, you know, with the Ruck Out Challenge, we had a lot of people sign up and a lot of people fell off fast with the miles, right? And the miles were higher when I initially put all that together. And
oh, Efren, yeah, I don't know.
Efren and Jeff were like, bro, what are you doing? And so I cut the miles in about half, believe that or not, right? And right. My point is we had three people finish of all, there he is, got the hard side hydration. We had three people finish and two, you know, you and Mike Edgehouse, I mean, you guys were killing it. You know, I got something to do this week. I got to get my miles in 3 days. 25 miles in 3 days with a 55-pound pack on. Or, you know, 22 miles in, you know, 4 days with, I think we were at 65 pounds plus carrying a 10-pound dumbbell. Has that work ethic, apparently that work ethic has been there.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But
yeah.
How much motivation does that September provide when I'm watching somebody go, I'm getting these 25 miles in 3 or 4 days with all this weight on me, and you were drenched coming through the finish lines, dude. There wasn't one time you weren't dripping, and we're watching going, this guy's a freaking stud.
Maniac. Yeah, so, you know, I think my work ethic is just driven through, you know, I've got a pretty good crew out here that, you know, really drives me to just be at my best as far as athleticism. It's funny, you know, you posted something today actually about having chiropractic therapy, how beneficial it's been for you. And funny enough, the buddy of mine that I took out this past season, who's probably going to be my elk partner for the longevity, is a chiropractor.
Oh, nice.
And he works with another one of our good friends who's also a sports therapist and chiropractor. And just the sheer knowledge that they have of, you know, muscle gain, recovery, you know, all these different workouts to be able to kind of provide your body this release of either, you know, these weird, you know, like muscle cramps, either aches or pains, things like that, everything stemming through the spinal system. They've pretty much knocked that shit for me and really helped me kind of coach, or more or less coached me through a lot of training programs and things like that. And they just keep me on my game, man. They really do. And the drive that they have at, you know, our age, we're almost 30, mid 30s, almost 40s. Dude, it's crazy. I mean, just having that in my back pocket is huge. Actually, my buddy, we went through the first elk season and I had a really bad knee pain and he called it. He was like, LCL pain, no worries. Come into my office. We'll get you dialed in. We'll do some acupuncture, all these different things I'd never done in my life. And I was kind of like, this is some snake oil shit, you know, like, it's not going to work.
Yep.
Like, dude, it's my knee. Like I'm busted. I'm going to have to take 6 or 7 weeks, bro. No, he got me in there, did all these exercises and then like basically did the acupuncture, some laser therapy and other shit. I swear to you, by like 3 or 4 days later, I was ready to rock. And I had another like 4 days past that for elk season again this next week, the following weekend. And he had kind of explained like everything of like breakdown on the injury based on like what I had told him on feedback and what I'd been doing. And basically I was side hilling a lot of these huge ravines that I hadn't really scouted much over in like your, you know, the Colorado Springs area. And I was just, you know, killing myself. And he was like, dude, try to like, you know, use your muscles this way. And like basically was teaching me how to traverse these mountains and hills and things like that in a different way that was more beneficial for my body. And since then, man, I've just, it's a wealth of knowledge that you just can't explain unless you have somebody that knows the body, knows the muscular and vascular system and skeletal system like they do. And it's just been huge for me. But I think, you know, as far as like getting back to work ethic, you know, my dad and brothers, we're so competitive. We loved just getting after it and working hard. I think my work ethic has always kind of been there, but especially for things that I love to do, you know, hiking, biking, snowboarding, you know, shit like that just drives me. And I think that, you know, when I get into September, there's just a switch, man. And I just go. And it's like, I feel like I have to beat people out to certain spaces. Or if I see elk, I'm like, I got to get on them, but I can't, I have to be patient, but I got to get to the spot where I think that I'm going to cut them off and start to game plan faster than everybody else. And it's kind of like Dan Staten says, sometimes he's like, I may not be the best, but I'll outwork you. Mm-hmm. And that's something that like hit me one day. I was like, bro, I need to step up my game if I'm going to be, you know, a public land hunter, because there's some people out here. It's, you know, you guys have some competitors in there that are absolute studs.
Monsters.
And dude, and it just like, it comes to show. I met Derek Wolf the other day at the freaking shooting range with another guy who runs Rocky Mountain Strength over here in Centennial. And bro, they're just jacked and they just look like animals. And I'm like, I want to be able to run with these kind of guys because I know I have it in me. I know I can do it. It's just mental. And I think, you know, this last year I did 75 hard. One of the hardest things I've ever done, straight up, besides the pack out check. Those
the picture's the goddamn worst, dude. I hated the pictures. The picture will throw you. I think I almost failed it at least 11 or 12 times. And I'd pop up out of bed and go, oh crap, look at the time. Like, I got 4 minutes to take that damn picture.
Want to rep the outdoor lifestyle off the mountain? Pack 'Em Out Apparel, the clothing line that's more than just trophies and filling freezers. At Pack 'Em Out, they believe in making memories that last a lifetime. Whether you're packing out a bull or preparing for a family adventure, a lifestyle brand that understands the importance of family, faith, and friends. Every time we head out, it's about creating cherished memories. At Pack 'Em Out Apparel, the brand stands for honor, integrity, and a genuine passion for the wild. Check them out at packemout.com.
But I think the biggest thing I loved about 75 Hard was they made you read. And my book of choice was Endure by Cam Haynes. And I listened to that, and just his story about backcountry bow hunting got me jacked. Then I listened to David Goggins' book, and that book got me jacked. And between, I think, that and a handful of other just like self-help, you know, like, get your shit together mm-hmm. kind of books, dude, I feel like my work ethic between my wake up schedule, my workout schedule, my routines of eating and just getting after it really bumped up. And I think the toughest thing for me, I think, was, you know, I was living, you know, 30, 45 minutes away from my office down in here in Littleton. I have a dog, which is tough. You know, it's like, you might as well have a kid. You know, you got to wake up early, get the dog fed, get him walked, same thing at night. So during your pack out challenge, man, I was only devoting an hour to be able to get these 5 miles in. Like, I could have probably given myself grace earlier in the mornings and later in the evenings had I not had these responsibilities of getting to work, taking care of the dog. But dude, I had a set deadline mm-hmm. and I was like, I got to get home, fix dinner, do all this other shit. Like, this is the window. If I don't do it now, I'm not going to
do it. Yep.
And so like, bro, that was kind of why I did it on a treadmill, because like, one, it was, you know, convenient. Easy to know the weight that I could use because I'm at a gym. You know, if it was 45 pounds, grab a 45 plate, throw it in the back, you know, kick the treadmill on. I know what my pace is. I know what, you know, everything to get to that time period that I needed in the crunch. And I think that was the toughest thing for me when I started doing the outside stuff, is because I didn't know where my pace was. And so when we had to do those outdoor miles, I didn't feel like it did anything different as far as like the physicality of it. But I do feel like I wasn't like driving myself as hard, because I felt like I was giving myself a little more time right. because I was already outside. And I was just basically running loops around my neighborhoods and stuff, and finding the city parks that were, you know, it was 50% dirt miles or something mm-hmm. like that. So I just basically just avoided all sidewalks, and people were just looking at me like,
what is this guy doing?
Like, there's a perfectly good sidewalk here, and he's just trudging through mud and snow.
We were watching you, and I'm like, and I told the boys, I said, man, let's see how he does, because coming up, we had, what did we do? We did 30% grade, and then we did the week on dirt. And it was intentional, right, by doing that, because I knew folks were going to look at it and go, okay, I'm going to walk around the neighborhood, right? But how often do we walk around the neighborhood when we're on the mountain? And that's really what we want to replicate. And we truly wanted people to be prepared for the pack out challenge. I mean,
absolutely,
we're not taking it easy on the terrain that we pick when we set that course.
No.
Like,
not even
it's,
close.
Yeah, it's going to be... you're going to have to work for it, right? You're going to have to prepare. You're going to have to work. So I was watching, and then the treadmill, I'm like, okay, it takes away a little bit of the mobility factor, right? Because you're that propulsion. So I was watching you, but man, you never missed a beat, dude. And it was impressive to watch it.
The hardest thing for me was the 30% grade. Just finding a 30% grade was just, unless you had to like drive all the way to the mountains. And again, like that was my tick, is I only had so much time.
Right.
I had a lot, especially during the week time. Cause you know, I had like basically either Saturday or Sunday, I'd already planned something with either, you know, a friend or, you know, whoever. And so I was like, I've got to get this done. And I just don't know how else to do it besides repping the treadmill. And it was, you know, it was brutal, bro. It was brutal.
I got,
I think the craziest thing was, you know, I think the temperature difference indoor versus exterior, because most of everybody was doing it during the wintertime outside. And when I did my one to 2 weeks outside, I could really feel like a complete difference in energy that I had stored available, because I wasn't just absolutely
drenched.
Like, dude, like I was literally like, I felt like I was like purging, everything out of my body. And I would come home and just, I felt like I was 25 pounds lighter. And I did that challenge outside, and I was like, man, like this cool breeze feels great. Like this cold weather is killing it. But at the same time, like I felt like I wasn't able to pace myself. So that pack started feeling real heavy. Yeah. Whenever you started waiting it around for like an extra 30 minutes, you know? And so I was like, man, shit, maybe I should start running this thing outside, like get it over with faster.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I don't know what happened with my scale that 1 week, but dude, I added like an extra 10 or 15 pounds.
There was a couple
I did
people that did it.
85 pounds for the 65 pound week for I think 12 miles before I recognized it. And I waited again. I was like, dude, holy shit, this is like a lot of freaking weight. And so like I waited again. I was like, dude, I'm a damn idiot. Like there's...
Well,
I don't know. I don't know where I went wrong, but I was just basically, you know, I do landscaping. So I just took a bunch of like scrap stone that we had just laying around the yard and just toss it in the bag and just step on the scale. And every time I'd get it, like, I was like, all right, I got to put a little bit more in. I just kept loading it. And I don't know what happened. I just like, I overloaded, bro.
Edge House, I think it was the first week we had the dumbbell carry. He was carrying two. And I was like, I saw it. Yeah, I saw it. And I'm like, I'm going to just let him go. And then, because we were recording, and I was like, I'll just tell him when we record. But he walked around. I think he walked around with two 10 pounders instead of the one. And I'm like, bro, like, it's brutal.
Yeah.
It is brutal. And I only had my 20s were the smallest. So I was carrying my 20. And dude, my arm was killed. And then I go, and then I don't know what I was thinking. I go down the garage and I look over, and then I look at my kettlebells and I'm like, oh, that's what I should be carrying, not this damn dumbbell.
Bro, I was kettlebell carrying all day long, and I had multiple people just looking like,
what are you doing?
Bro, that's a lot of weight to be. And they would look at me, look at the kettlebell, my bag, and then look at the total miles I was on. And just like, they could see that I was just, my face was just grit, bro. it was like week two or week three, and I was running, and the treadmill has a stop and a go button on it. And I stared a hole through go, bro. I was just like, you got to keep chugging, dude. Get this over with.
Yep.
Like you got a fresh meal at home. Like, let's grind it.
So talk about your, and maybe 75 hard helped with it, right? You talked about that a little. But talk about kind of that revelation of realizing, because a lot of what we do is, man, I don't have time. Oh, I'll do it later. You know, I'll get up early tomorrow. But then you always seem, now that you're a month down the road, you've done maybe a mile, right? You're kicking yourself in the butt. But if you just do it, you have this switch that flips and you go, I got all the freaking time in the world to do this. Like, you just got to commit to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, my biggest thing was like, yeah, I'm very OCD when it comes to a lot of shit. So I had to plan. I had to make sure that like everything was like, you know, by the time I left work, I knew I had 45 minutes to an hour to get home, change, whatever, get to the gym and rip. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, time management is such a hard thing and a hard concept.
Right.
But even in like the elk hunting world, you know, like you start to think of like, oh, well, it's only 5 days. I've got plenty of time. No, like wake up at 4, dude. Don't stop hunting till end of daylight. Like I know multiple people and I've heard it over and over again on podcasts where, you know, the guys are like, what the hell are you doing back at camp before daylight?
Yeah, that's like crazy.
Get your ass out there. Like, make sure that you have a game plan formulated. Don't just go out there and half-ass it because you're going to come home and eat tag soup.
Right.
It sucks. And I have plenty of homies that come out here from out of state and they think that they can do this, but they don't have their time management together. And they'll get out there and they wake up at like 7:30 or 8, whatever, cook breakfast. And by the time it's like 5 before daylight, they're almost back at camp. And I'm like, dude, like, no, that's... this isn't how we're going to rock this.
Yeah, it's like, that whole thing to me is insane. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. You wait all year. You know you have 7 to 10 days, generally speaking. Some guys are traveling a day in each, you know, a day each direction. So that knocks you down to, you know, either 5 days or 8 days, depending on the 7 or 10. To not go balls to the wall, dark to dark, is you're cutting your chances in half, right? So if it's 10%, you've just wiped that totally out of it. I mean, it's crazy to me. Like, come September, dude, I'm dead. Like, at the end, everybody's like, oh, when you go back after the whole month off, how was vacation? I'm like, vacation, motherfucker? It's elk season. That's not vacation. Yeah. It's like I'm working harder on the mountain than I do every single day because it's fainting, right? It's this much time out of our lives every freaking year. Like, why waste it, right? And you're not getting any younger. Why waste any moment of that, man? And
right,
it can change in 10 seconds. It can be last shooting light and the opportunity is right in front of you, but you won't ever know if you're back in camp tossing back some cans of Coors or something.
Dude, the craziest thing happened to me. Second to last, or I think last week of elk season this past year, and like hunted all the way to dark, and it was like almost like pitch black. Walk back up to my tent, and lo and behold, 2 bulls and 14 cows are coming in like over the ridge to my tent. And I'm just like, I don't even know what to say right now. So I like, I was reaching down to untie my boots, guy. And like, I look up and I hear just this freaking giant rip on the hillside, 250, 300 yards up the hill. So I'm like, holy shit, like this is about to happen. Like within like a couple hundred yards of the tent, like this is a miracle. And so I start walking up through there and like, you know, it's getting to a point where like, it's too dark and I'm not going to make a shot. And I'm just wanting to just keep in contact and locate whatever. And the craziest shit happened. I like hear something walking around my tent and I look over my shoulder and there's a moose, full moose, just walking around my tent. I'm like, dude, like, what are the chances that I have
elk all these elves
right here next to my tent, bugling, carrying on, and then a bull moose just roaming around my tent. And I'm just like, you know, like kill an elk or not, like that is one of the coolest experiences, sir, I could have ever asked for. And just like, I sat in my tent that night and recorded after that. I was like, I don't even know what to say. Like, this has been one of the coolest trips. The fact that I've been on elk like crazy this whole weekend, and then I have these wild experiences, just it comes to show that like September is so worth putting in ounce of effort because you can catch up on sleep in October.
That's right.
You know, like, and that's my gig this next year is that I think, you know, even I'm probably going to dive even further and start, you know, dabbling into the night game, you know, like start running ridges, doing some night bugling, trying to see what I can kind of drum up. And that's a strategy I've never tried. And I think that that's something, you know, as a hunter, I'm going to try and at least soak in new strategies and things that I didn't try the season before just to see and test the waters. And I think that's something that is very important as far as being elk hunters is you got to be adaptive, man. You can't run on one set of ears that somebody's told you and just be like, yeah, this is the way and I'm not going to change it because you're going to be stubborn and hard headed and you're going to miss a lot of opportunities. You got to be willing to move and jive.
Well, there's a lot to be said about diversification in your repertoire, be it calling, be it how you pursue them, you know, waking up at 1 a.m. and bugling until 3. There's a ton to be said about that. So what are you doing? What are you doing different? Because I talk to guys all the time. They're like, man, I didn't see one elk. I didn't hear an elk. Oh, we didn't hear any elk. There's no elk over there. Those numbers must be low. Blah, 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 bullshit. What are you doing to put yourself in the right place? If you're having encounters like that, you're doing your homework. What are you doing?
Homework. E-scouting, man. I scout. I couldn't tell you the amount of hours I put in on Onyx. Love it. It's one of my favorite apps. You know, it just being a landscape architect too, I think it helps me understand terrain, understand knowledge of like sources of water, cover, things like that are just in food sources, open ranges, things that where travel patterns are going to be. And then utilizing all the features on that system, you know, following migration patterns. And obviously, you know, finding those guys that have the wealth of knowledge that know where elk populations are and then putting boots on the ground, dude. I hike probably over 150 miles during the summertime, just getting cameras out, getting out there, figuring out where the hell I need to be. That is so important if you're going to be in the state rocking it out for the full month. And even if you're out of state, like try to get out and put boots on the ground, dude. It's going to be a huge bonus in your back pocket. I mean, the reason that I hunted the place that I did is I started to bump into elk sign. And about the time I found elk sign, I found a guide set up. They were out there probably 5-10 miles deep into this national forest. And I found this big bunch of wall tents and I put a point on Onyx. I was like, they've got to be here for a reason. You know, there's no reason why they're just out here bullshitting in August right before September, and there just happens to be all this elk sign that I'm finding close by. So obviously I wasn't going to blow up their spot. I was going to hunt like in the area, you know, just like, you know, I did my due diligence. It's not like I just, you know, walked into their camp and started asking questions. I just, you know, let them be and did my thing. And sure enough, dude, like first day I roll into that thing and like that elk unit. And I'd honestly not seen a lot as far as like elk per se. I'd seen sign, but not elk. And first day rolled up on 100 of them, bro. And I was just, at that point it clicked. I was like, I know I'm doing shit right. Like looking for the right amount of sign. I know what sign is fresh, what sign is old, where rubs are, where wallows are probably going to be, and finding all these water sources, trail, you know, putting it is so crucial to have a game plan before you get out there. And Onyx Maps is it. That is my game plan. I have two phones, my work phone and my personal, and both of them have full battery at all time with Onyx downloaded. Every single map is the same waypoints, same lines, taking me all the way through my routes. Way over OCD with this shit, but it is helping me.
Oh, no, it's.
And then not only that, but I think the tracking feature too is a huge, huge, big ups. And something that Dan Elkshapen said this past year was like, make sure to like walk those like trails that you think those elk are on, because it's not just by happenstance they're using it once. Like they're probably ritualistically using those elk, you know, those pathways and those trails consistently through those wood systems. So record those, make sure you have all your points. If you're finding elk in places, you're finding scat, whatever, rubs, label that shit. Don't don't let it just bypass, because that stuff is a wealth of knowledge for seasons to come.
Heck yeah.
And, I just know from growing up hunting that I've killed multiple toms, talking turkeys here, on the same freaking trail, same little spot, same little holes, over and over and over. And it's not just by happenstance. These animals run these routes day in, day out. That is their lifestyle. That's the way they have to go from, field to field, water hole to water hole. So don't feel like it's like an overused thing. It's they've been using it for probably 10 to 100 years based on how old the forest is. So don't disregard those areas. And I think that's something that's helped me just a boatload, is just e-scouting and getting out there and just making sure that I have a solid ass game plan before I get out there, because I don't want to be sliffed out. I've been in areas where I thought the contours were good enough. Bro, I'm on my hands and fucking knees. Yep. And it's awful. And I'll tell you right now, like, I've learned to be able to run the ridges like the elk have, I feel like, in the last 3 years. And that's just the encounters that I had this last year tells me that I'm doing all the right mm-hmm. stuff in my homework.
I mean, that's an important one, right? And I don't think people talk about it enough, is traveling like they travel. Right. Where are they going to move? What's going to offer them that security, whether it be from bed to feed or to their water source, and really picking that landscape apart and saying, well, if I was a bull, this is where I would, come through. Or if I was that lead cow, who's probably run that route 1,000 times in, 10, 11, 12, 13 years, and really picking that apart. And I think that is the difference maker, is when for me, it's assess, plan, execute. And there's always deviations to the plan when you're in the field. But man, I'll spin off of it. And it's like, I'll see a ridge and like, okay, I just want to go over there for whatever reason, right? But I always come back to that freaking plan so I can follow through with my execution. If I get my ass kicked, I come off the mountain and I know that I followed my plan. I don't have any regrets as long as I worked as hard as I possibly could, that month. And it's pretty interesting when you start to dissect it in that way. But I think assessing it, man, and just hard ass execution of the plan, going out and just kind of free willy, just willy nilly in the woods, that shit don't work for me.
Not
even. I won't see a goddamn quail, a grouse, nothing,
Yeah. I mean, and I think the biggest thing for me this last year was understanding how much I can bite off and chew, mm-hmm. I was putting down routes before, and scouting and stuff that were like, one day was like 16 or 17 miles and like up one hill, down another, bro. And I figured out real quick that you don't particularly have to run that kind of loop, right, or those long stations in order to figure out where the hell the elk are. Right. Like I think we got maybe a quarter of the way through the first, like 7-8 mile stretch before we had to pop squat because we started finding elk. And I was just like, well, now I have to really, I have to basically take my game plan that I have that was basically going a completely opposite direction.
Freaking
and now I have to spend an hour or two reassessing mm-hmm. and trying to figure out, well, where's my loops? Where's my entries? How can I get back to the truck? All these different things. And so I had to basically reassess in the field. And that's, again, I can't thank Onyx enough for having these map systems, being able to download and be able to edit live. Because, dude, that's constant. Like, I have my phone almost 24/7 in my hand when I'm out there repping. Unless, I'm up on elk, then I'm just like, I'm about to do the business. Like, I don't need this anymore. But I'm consistently formulating plans, and I'm constantly, finding a new way to attack. And I look at it kind of like, Navy SEALs or anything else. It's like you find a plan, and when the plan starts to jive and move into a different direction, you got to be able to mold.
That's right.
And so, those are the kind of things as a hunter, you got to be fluid, liquid, dude. You can't just stick to one script and say that's it.
Oh,
things change quick.
Yeah, that's a disappointment. My buddy will listen to this and it'll be like, he's talking about me again. But, what happens is people fall in love with landscape, or they fall in love with tradition. And this is the area that we camp for X amount of years. So we hunt here, here, and here. And then when it's not productive, they still hunt it. And you know,
totally.
This year, you know, Scott, if you're listening, I'll get back to camp and I'm like, yeah, dude, there's five bulls over here. We saw two bulls here, you know, a bunch of cows there, some rags and, you know, oh, cool. And then they go right back to the spot and they come back and it's, you know, the same thing, you know, no encounters. Oh, we thought we heard something, didn't see anything. And it's like, damn, man, damn. Like you have this much time again. It's fleeting.
Maximize.
Yeah. Man. It's fleeting time. So, you know, don't squander that, but to each their own. That makes it a little, I don't know. It's disappointing to see it because you want, for me at least, I want everyone to go out there and experience September the way I experience it. You know what I mean? Just that charge to the soul, that connection to God, the connection to myself, coming off the mountain a better man. And then when you see them disappointed and beat up, it's like, damn, they're missing it. They're missing it. They're missing it. It just sucks to watch it, but yeah, that's, I'd say you're doing pretty damn good, dude. Three seasons in with that amount of encounters, that ain't a bad deal, especially. And I heard you say it earlier, OTC, right? Cause that ain't an easy shtick to get away from folks and to have encounters. And then you cross somebody that's on the road or the trail and they're like, again, I haven't seen or heard shit in, you know, 6 days. And it's like, oh man, is it? And all I could ever say is, isn't it rough? I can't say, hey, bro, I feel for you. Go this way.
I feel so bad sometimes. Like, dude, I had three or four like instances where like I had just been on like a crazy amount of elk, and I like, you know, lost them. They, you know, they disappeared, whatever. And I roll up and start calling, and these like it was muzzleloader season. These two muzzleloaders roll in, and they sat down and yard with me for like 10 minutes. And they're like, "Well, have you seen anything?" And I was just like, "Yes, but no, sir, I have not seen a thing all weekend." And I just feel bad, but like, dude, it's due diligence. You got to put in that footwork to be able to like, you know, get that satisfaction. And,
well, the worst thing about telling a guy. For me, if I'm talking to somebody and I ask them how they're doing and they tell me that they saw a bull or they missed a bull or whatever it is, I refuse to go to that area knowing that they're hunting that area. The worst part for me is I've said, yeah, well, man, we were over here, saw, you know, X, Y, or Z. And then the next day you turn around, the sons of bitches are in there. You know what I mean? And they're kind of cutting you off. And it's public land. I get it. But it's like, come on, man, there's a little bit to be said about etiquette in the woods. You know, totally. So it's kind of led me to the, you know, unless I know you, I'm sorry, I'm fucking lying to you.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's like, we're all out there for the same purpose, to be able to fill a tag. And, you know, if you see me with my bow in hand, I'm grinding, dude. Mm-hmm. And most likely, like, you know, and I hate to say it, but we're trying to fill a plate.
That's right.
And, you know, and that's the portion of it too, is like, you know, we're all out here trying to fill a tag. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's cutthroat, but it is competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like going fly fishing or anything like that. I'll respect your space. You respect mine. Don't mess with my shit. I won't mess with your shit. But I mean, as far as like me giving you props to like go and find the honey hole that I've
just
worked my ass off to get to.
Yeah. Ain't happening.
You're gonna have to figure it out on your own. You know, like this is work, dude. You know, I'm out here in September for only 30 days and, you know, I've put in this scouting work. I've been working my ass off up until then. You better have been putting in the same amount of work for me to be able to dot you off some points. Heck there. Yeah. So I totally get that.
Are you, are you any bull? Whatever comes in, rags?
Oh, yeah. As far as shooting, man, you know, I really just want to get the monkey off my back. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I usually have done either sex tags these last 2 years. I'd be happy with just shooting a cow, to be completely honest. But in retrospect, like if I have a bull that is coming in with cows, I'm probably going to be targeting after the bull. But, you know, I'm an ethical hunter, so I'm going to take a good, if it's a good clean shot at a cow and I know I can hit her, I'm taking
Heck
it.
Yeah.
I'm taking Nothing it for wrong sure. With that. And I, you know, there's the bonus of living in Colorado. You can always go back and get another tag and go hunt again.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it all. It's like, you know, I can fill the freezer, come back out another weekend if I want, or I can train up and get ready for next year. Mm-hmm. But I think that the biggest thing for me is just, I want to, you know, fill my tag and get that monkey off my back for sure. And I would love it to be a bull. I'd love it to be a giant freaking 6x6 with, you know, this beautiful mount sitting on my wall. But again, very, you know, I shot a buck whenever I was back over in Kentucky over Christmas, and it was one of the second bucks I've ever killed as far as like with a bow. And it wasn't a big buck, but for me to fill my freezer and not go to the grocery for the next 3 months, dude, it's been great.
Heck yeah.
I haven't had fresh meat off the farm in over 5 or 7 years since I've lived there. And, you know, it used to be like every other night I'd have deer burger and turkey and fresh, you know, trout from the river. And it's just like, now I'm like, I'm having to work for it on my own out here. So you take what you can get, man. And, you know, I love the episode that you guys did with Michael. Cause I mean, I'm a very self-sufficient guy. And so his app, the CutRight app, is insane. And I cannot say that enough to people. Get the app. It's so inexpensive for the wealth of knowledge that he's given out to be able to like process your own meat and dress it in the field. That's some things, dude, that like blows my mind that people just don't know. And I, for the longest time, I didn't know. But because of elk hunting, because of the Western nature of hunting, it's exposed me to so many better ways to be able to get that animal off the mountain in a clean fashion, in a way that you can drop a shitload of weight and still be able to get all the necessary meat off the mountain and be able to kind of restore that the rest of that body to the natural habitat. I mean, it's great. And he is so knowledgeable when it comes to cuts of meats and shit like that. I mean, it was a wealth of knowledge when I listened to y'all's podcast, and he's just a good,
I love that guy.
He's got great recipes and everything like
that. That dude is handy with the steel, man. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody handle a knife the way that Michael handles a freaking knife, dude. I mean, it is just butter.
He knows it too. I mean, it's crazy, bro.
Butter. So before we cut out, well, no, there's a couple things before we cut out. And I've been asking this question the last few episodes, especially at the Hunt Expo, but there's this outlook that, I don't know, maybe it's just shit that I notice, but how we view failure, right? People are scared because they don't want to fail, or they fail, you know, their second, third, fourth time out at something and they just give up. So I really want people thinking, like, I think we need to talk about what, I don't know, redefining maybe what failure is. How would you present that to somebody? You know, when we talk about how we look at failure.
Man, there's a quote, and I'll say this. Samuel L. Jackson played Coach Carter. Have you ever seen that movie? So basically, he kind of proposes failure as the lack of trying. And I couldn't say it enough, man. I feel like if you are absolutely putting your heart into something, don't feel like a failure. You tried your freaking ass off and you are doing something that probably 90% of the population didn't want to do or has never had the balls to try. And that's something that, like, I feel a lot of people are terrified to fail or not live up to this competitive edge that they feel they have to have. Like, get out and do it, man. Like the pack 'em out challenge. I was shitting bricks when you guys first laid out like the pack out challenge and the total miles. I was like, dude, I'll probably end up dropping out by week 4. And just, I think there was just this inner grind of me being like, well, I don't care if I win or lose at like any of these competitions. I just want to know that I finished. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know that like I tried my hardest. And man, I just like, during September this last year, I had like a talk to God moment. You know, I had spent a lot of this last year in kind of a weird haze. I've lost my brother in a weird tragedy. And just being out there, man, it just connected me so much with just my inner spirituality and just getting close. And just all the freaking hard work and dedication I'd put into elk hunting this last year, I found myself right after I'd got through with the stalk, I just started bawling, man. I was just like, I was so enamored by the experience. And it was almost the end of elk season. I was like, you know what? Like, Connor, you can't get down on yourself for anything that you've done so far. You've tried your wits at this and just had crazy encounters. You've got stories to tell that like will blow people's freaking minds. And dude, I loved it. I loved every minute of it. And I, at that point, I knew that like, there's no turning back. I've got to do this every single year for the rest of my life, as long as I can do this. This is amazing. It's such a feeling, an adrenaline rush, a fix that you can't get off anything else except for life, dude. And this is real shit, you know? And yeah, failure is only as far as what you take it to be. Dude, I'm very thankful for just the opportunity to be able to do this stuff and be able to talk to you about it. You know, if you're out there trying, man, there's no failure to it.
There it is.
It's just, you know, keep rocking.
Oh yeah.
You're just going to get better.
That's it.
That's all it is.
That's the biggest part, right? I mean, you know, for me, when I look at failure, you know, early on, right, it was a cut and dry thing, right? I didn't make it. I failed. Everything was, and you don't look at it as that cliche sound and proverbial lesson, right? But you're not failing as long as you don't quit, right? That not trying part. I don't know if that's failure or just straight up bitching out. I'll say it's straight up bitching out, but yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Absolutely.
So,
and you know, I think that's the big thing, you know, is people are scared to take that first step, but like you can't walk 100 miles unless you take the first
step. That's right.
And that's there's so many cliche quotes and shit like that.
For a reason, though.
It is so true.
Right.
You know, take that first step, try it, give it a whirl, man. Like you can't, there's no harm hurt in trying.
That's right.
And that's one thing my dad's always pushed us to do is like, give it a whirl. If you hate it, by all means, you know, give it up afterwards, but don't discard it or don't judge the book by its cover just yet, because you may find out that it's one of the greatest things that's ever happened.
Yeah. Nothing. My mom used to say that nothing beats a failure, but a try. And I, right. To this day, and I hate saying that my parents said, but to this day I said it. So you and I had a conversation after that last week, and I kind of held off on it, and you said, well, who won, you know, who won this, who won that? So you didn't win the last week giveaway. That went to Mike Edgehouse. There was only three of you guys that finished.
Oh, yeah.
We drew him, but you, buddy, won everything else. So we,
dude,
yeah. So you got hooked up with stuff from the Elk Bros, Native by Carlson, the Bow Hitch, Western Fly, Pack 'Em Out Apparel. So I'll kick you. I was waiting for this to kind of drop it. I was killing me because I wanted to post it over the weekend on the Hunt Fest thing.
Honestly, I'm super humbled.
Yeah, dude.
Like I said, I can't thank you guys enough for just putting this on and being so gracious for all these challenges and putting us to work, man. Like I enjoyed the shit out of
good,
it. Like
man,
every
good.
Day I came back and it was, you know, I just felt like I just like tackled every demon that I had for the day, you know, like it was one of those feelings like I can do anything.
Yeah.
Like, and I think I'd heard something on another podcast. It was like, you know, you can do anything for a day, anything. And dude, that would roll through my mind almost every challenge, every week. I was just like, just get in there, Connor, do it. Don't let it grind you to the gears.
Isn't that a Frisella thing? I think
temporary.
Yeah.
Every pain is temporary, man.
Right.
Legends live for freaking ever.
Yep.
So dude, stoked on that.
Yeah.
That's
we'll
huge.
We'll get you that stuff sent out, and I'll get with Ephron and see what, you know, we had the $5 pot that, you know, folks who signed up put into.
Okay.
So we'll get that kick to you, man. And we look forward to seeing you at the Western Hunt Fest, brother. And it's been, you know, been a great conversation. Cool to sit down and get to know you kind of, you know, semi face to face and share some of that.
Dude,
September.
We'll have to go shoot bows. I'm telling you, I'm itching to go hit the range with you guys.
Yeah. You know what? I'll shoot you. I'll add you to the text chain. I think there's an
ASA.
Yeah. I think are you on there?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay.
They added me last week.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm
cool.
Repping that for sure.
Okay.
March 17th, I believe.
Yeah. I think it's the 17th. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, that'll be a blast. I may or may not make it over the Continental Divide, undecided yet. So,
totally.
You know, I miss those things when they go down over there on that. But I'd rather stay on my mountainside of things than that city
absolutely.
Life. You
well,
guys
I'll definitely
are living.
See you at Western Hunt.
Oh, for sure, brother.
Down.
Yeah,
you better come in hot.
Hell yeah, we're ready for it, man. There's you're on the list now, watching you work. And there's some competitors, dude. There is going to be some competitors.
Oh, I know.
So.
I mean, I'm a small guy. That's the only disadvantage.
I don't know, man. Muscle is expensive on the mountain, dude. It is expensive on the mountain. So, you know, we'll see. There's a couple of beasts But I think you'll be there. I think you'll be there. You got a shot at getting to Bailey, dude. You get to Bailey, that prize package is nuts. It is freaking nuts.
I'm ready.
The cash.
I mean, it's
the optics.
It's such, like, you guys put on such a great event, and not only that, but like you're giving, rewarding us with like such a great package to be able to take out straight into the field and ret, you know, and like even this dude, this thing has saved me. So like the last 3 weeks, dude, I was sucking on that thing like it was like like my life resort.
That,
and it just was so clutch.
The you know, the coolest thing about it, right, is the company's kick in, right? The Bowhitch guys, Hardside Hydration, Kafaru, everyone that kicks in. The best is the shit is some of the best out there. That's the part. It's like when we look at the prize package, right? Not only are you, you know, you're getting a few thousand dollars in just straight up cash, but then you have gear that, like you said, you could load it into the pack and leave from the chute, go hit the woods and have shit that's going to perform and do what we need it to do. And I'm a gearhead. So when it's good gear, like I'm all about it. I am all about it. But brother, I appreciate the time, man. I'll be in full anticipation of getting to shake your hand either the 17th or when we hit Hunt Fest. If you can make more than one, get that point accumulation, hint, hint,
sure.
and get invited to that Bailey shoot. But until then, brother, you know, keep grinding and, hope to see you on the mountain.
Yeah. Hey, man. Yeah, it's been fun talking to you. Okay.